IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
Professor Anthony Turton is a professor at the Center of Environmental Management at the University of the Free State. Good morning, Professor. How are you today?
Good morning to you, the listeners. What are we talking about today?
We are talking about generators. Well, because the point is, it's very, very simple, that when Eskom and when the government can't provide us with electricity, South Africans mark a plan. So we are either getting inverters, we're getting JoJo tanks for our water, we are getting inverters or generators or solar panels, but either way, we are going to find a solution. And the problem with this is that often we don't look at the unintended consequences. The concern around generators, of course, is not only the noise, is the pollution around it, and what about the carbon monoxide? Is that a problem?
Oh, yes, carbon monoxide is a particularly potent substance. If you want to go into a sort of the physiology of how it works in the human body, that helps to explain what makes it so potent.
Mm-hmm.
In the human body, you've got red blood cells, and the red blood cells have got hemoglobin in it. And the hemoglobin has got a very high affinity for two substances. One is oxygen, and the other one is carbon dioxide.
Right.
So we can think of these as little buses moving around the body. They go through, you know, from the lungs, where they exchange the oxygen and the carbon dioxide. And then they go out through the arteries and throughout the body into the different parts of the body where they are drop off the oxygen and they pick up the carbon dioxide bring back to the lungs. But those molecules are extremely tightly bound to the hemoglobin until such time as you now get carbon monoxide. What carbon monoxide does, it forms a bond with the hemoglobin.
Right.
Far more potent than the bond capable with oxygen or carbon dioxide. So in other words, once the carbon monoxide is present, it saturates the red blood cells, and it will not give up. It will not desaturate. It will not enable the red blood cell to now pick up and transport oxygen and carbon dioxide as it should be. So it's not just a question of it being toxic. It's a question of it actually preventing the blood from being able to perform its core function, which is to transport oxygen and carbon dioxide around the body.
And how much of this carbon monoxide is created by a generator?
Well, a generator is I look all internal combustions are created. So any city got lots of motor cars driving around, so there's lots of carbon monoxide around. But of course, it gets diluted, in the atmosphere. So where the danger comes is where you are putting your generator, for example, in a confined space. And at no time should there ever be a generator running in a confined space. In fact, there are a whole lot of laws and rules and regulations around generators. I can go through some of them briefly, but one of them is that your generator should never ever be allowed to run inside the house. It always has to be run outside in a well-ventilated space, in which case you are quite safe.
Right.
But if it's in a confined garage, then I'm afraid you are in for danger, because the strange thing about carbon monoxide, besides the fact that it saturates your red blood cell, as I've explained, and won't desaturate, what it also does is it's got no smell. It's colorless, odorless, and tasteless. So you don't know that you're exposed to it. And all that happens is you simply start getting lightheaded. You simply start going into a bit of a daze. And before you know it, you pass out. And you pass out in a place that's got a lot more of this gas in it. And therefore, you can't get yourself out to a place of safety. And that's the problem. It's an insidious thing. And it's the death is caused by hypoxia. So the death is caused by the starvation of oxygen. The organs become starved of oxygen. So you get brain damage and your central nervous system shuts down because you can't then breathe. Your lungs stop functioning, etc.
Is there a way to test this? Or is it really just simply a matter of making sure that your generator is in a well-ventilated area?
Yes, I think firstly the step number one would be to have the system designed by a proper professional, a certified professional. When I say certified professional, there's legal liability that comes with certification.
Right.
So if you have a certified professional, then they carry the liability. Then secondly, you can get almost like a fire alarm. You can get a carbon monoxide alarm.
Oh, interesting.
But I almost think that is unnecessary if the thing is certified and if it's designed correctly. So, you know, the problem comes down where you've got any combustion taking place in a confined space. So it's not only a generator. It can also be a fire. And, of course, one of the big ones is those gas geysers. If you have a gas geyser that doesn't ventilate outside properly, then exactly the same thing happens with a gas geyser. And it's all about the production of carbon monoxide that has got a high affinity for hemoglobin in the blood. And once it's attached to the hemoglobin, it does not detach. And therefore, it blocks the space on the red blood cell that would normally be used to transport oxygen into the body and the carbon dioxide out of the body.
Are there some generators that are designed to produce less, or is it really just one of the things that we can't help if we're using a generator?
It's a byproduct of combustion. So if you're combusting any fuel, no matter what your fuel is, the fuel could be wood for a braai. The same thing would apply there. It could be charcoal for your briquettes for your Saturday or Sunday braai. It would be exactly the same thing. You wouldn't think of having an open fire inside your house, other than in a proper engineered fireplace where you've got a decent chimney that takes all the gases up the flue. So it's the same sort of logic that applies.
Right. So the message here is very, very clear, is just make sure that you, if you do have a generator, that you have it in a place that is well ventilated. Once it's dispersed, once it's outside, in even if it's in, let's say, a passageway in your yard, in a backyard, but it is open to the environment, is that okay? Is that enough, do you think?
Yes, that's enough. If just going from the top of my memory now, you look at what the air that we breathe, what it's made up of. Mm-hmm. It's made up of approximately 80% of the air we breathe is nitrogen gas, and then approximately 18% of the air we breathe is oxygen. And then the other 2% is made up of other gases, mixed gases. And one of those mixed gases is carbon dioxide, methane, carbon monoxide, all those different nitrous oxide, etc. That's all that little tiny little sliver of less than 2% of the total gases that we mix. So in a diluted state, it's okay. But you remember that the mechanism that it works by is that it attaches to the red blood cell and it doesn't detach itself. So therefore, even if a person goes into a room that has got a lot of carbon monoxide in it and collapses, and if you drag them out into a place where there's no more carbon monoxide, it doesn't mean to say that they're out of the woods. They still need a proper professional medical care, because the red blood cell does not want to relinquish the carbon monoxide that it's attached to. So there's a whole process to get rid of that. So I would go so far as to say that in all cases where somebody collapses,
you just get professional help.
You need professional help, absolutely.
Fantastic. Very interesting conversation and very important one. Professor Anthony Turton, professor at the Center for Environmental Management at the University of the Free State, talking to us because of the power outages, the increased use of generators, and the danger of carbon monoxide. It is 7:30. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.